Hello, everyone. Welcome to Game Grooves Uncovered. I believe this is episode 6, so if you've listened to all of them, great. You get an award. No, you don't, but here we are. And here we are with Eric L. You all should know him from his Summer of Covers and as that guy who plays trombone. Do you think that's a fair enough introduction for you?
I would say that's fairly accurate.
You know,
I would say Marathon Mode was Summer of Covers too, very much paying homage to our friend Insane in the Rain Music.
Yes, you know what? I forgot that it was called Marathon Mode, and I auto-corrected in my head Summer of Covers.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens. You know, it happens to the best of us and the worst of us. But yeah. Marathon Mode, that's what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we start out by talking about Marathon Mode? I know it's been more than a year since you've done it, but might as well get it where we hear your voice instead of reading from an article. What was Marathon Mode and why did you do it?
Sure. So for the uninitiated, Marathon Mode was a project I tackled last year where I believe from July 1st through August 3rd, I uploaded a new video game music cover every day. I think it ended up being, 35 days? 34 Ooh. Days, that's right. And that was a project I had tackled. You know, many people in the video game music community, they know a specific conversation with a specific, YouTube guru is what we've all just collectively agreed to call him, where he talked about uploading videos every day as a strategy to develop an audience. And I wanted to test this and see if this would work for a video game music cover channel. And I had some other reasons too, but the biggest one was just like finding out if this would actually work. I also wanted to, you know, do some things like just work on my process and figure out, mm-hmm. okay, what works best for me to work the fastest, or what can I try differently? It was also a great opportunity to work on collaborations with other people. I did my first big band arrangement. I did my first arrangement with string players and an electric guitar solo. Just a bunch of cool stuff came out of that. But really, just the biggest point of the project was to kind of test this theory of do daily uploads kind of help develop an audience.
Mm. And what's your verdict from that?
So my verdict is no, no, it does not. But there are a lot of skills that you can learn from doing that you can then apply to the video making process. And you can help develop your craft in a way that it would potentially help you develop an audience, or at least, at the very least, get good enough at what you do, so that when you do find an audience, you're giving them a good product instead of trying to polish turds, as it were.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Great. So yeah, what kind of what did that do for you? I know that you said that it helped you with your process, but are there any specifics that you found while doing this that you probably wouldn't have found just making regular covers and taking the standard amount of time to make them?
Sure. So I'm trying to think back to like what specifically had changed in that moment, because I've had things that have changed independently of that since then. But I think one of the biggest things that I developed was just this ability to kind of like, there's a sort of, or at least there was a sort of filter that I had in place that was like, man, this is not good enough. In particular with things like recording an improvised solo or something, I'd be like, man, this is not good enough, and do like way too many takes. And doing something where I was uploading videos every day, I came to a point where I was like, okay, this isn't perfect, but it's good enough because I need to get on to the next one. And so I think kind of just removing that bit of perfectionism from the process, I think has helped me to do a little bit better work. And honestly, I think at times it sounds a little more human. You know, I have solos these days that I take that it, you know, it might sound like there's a very obvious mistake in there, but you know, the great jazz musicians of, you know, the entirety of jazz, you know, there are mistakes in solos. And kind of a hotly debated topic in, I guess, the realm of jazz music is, did Miles Davis, you know, was he bad at the trumpet? And there are cases to be made in both directions. I still don't really have an opinion either way. But like, there are a lot of cases of just, you know, mistakes being made, and they're like a very obvious mistake, and kind of moving past this idea of everything has to be this like polished perfect thing before I put it out, has kind of helped me in my process. I would say that, and also just, you know, playing bass a lot more. I got a lot better at bass, which was a very helpful thing. That was something I struggled with for a while, and I still struggle to a fault, but it's better now.
Well, that's good. So basically it, You kind of got like done is better than perfect kind of thing.
That I think that's the best way to put that.
Beautiful. Cool. Well, you know what? Why don't you kind of touched on this a little bit, but so you're a jazz trombonist. Let's dive into that a little bit. Why did you, what draws you to jazz and what kind of inspired you to make this YouTube channel?
Okay, so I think a lot of people, especially, you know, today, I think a lot of people probably have a similar experience, in mentioning, once again, Insane in the Rain music. I remember the day very specifically. It was January 20th, 2016. I had a snow day out from school, and I decided, hey, I'm going to start a YouTube channel. I had some recording equipment available from a previous project, and I recorded a cover of Green Hill Zone. And the only reason I really decided to post it anywhere is because I had seen Carlos's videos and I was like, man, that seems fun. Like, yeah, I'll do that. Why not? I think from watching, I think it was his channel, Tara C Music's channel and, Sab Irene's channels. They had kind of inspired me to be like, okay, I want to get into the video game music community a little bit. Then I realized how big the community was. And that combined, with some things I was doing through school, is kind of how I settled on jazz, video game jazz trombone as the thing I was going to do on YouTube.
Beautiful.
And I've actually, I think I was actually more of a classical trombonist before I started my channel. And then, it would have been the third year into my channel. I actually, in school, I was a music education major. And I changed to jazz performance because I decided I liked that better. And that was more along the lines of what I wanted to do. And I think that applies itself very well to, you know, being a video game jazz trombone channel on YouTube. You know, it lends itself very well. And as far as arranging goes, improvising the stylistic elements of playing the music.
For sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, so... Personally, I'm a trombone player. Most people, in fact, I feel like everyone doesn't know that about me. I haven't made any covers, but all throughout high school and even briefly in college, I was very much jazz trombone. So I figure let's turn out about trombones for a little bit. I feel like it's trombones are a little unappreciated. In my opinion,
I would agree with that. I would very much agree with that.
Like it's all hype around the trumpets and the, like whenever we get a cool trombone part, it's so cool. It's unique with the sliding element and all that. All of that stuff. It's beautiful. If you're listening to this and you play trombone, do more with it. We love it.
Please do more.
Yes, absolutely. Please. But let's talk about. There's some aspects of trombone, lots of aspects about trombone that you are much more familiar with through your videos, and that is the different kinds of trombones. I've only played with the traditional slide and the F trombone. Beyond that, I am very unfamiliar. So let's start first with what's your main trombone?
So... as of now, and this is something I may be thinking about changing, my main trombone is still just the slide trombone, not even the one with the F attachment, just a regular, regular, if you start in a beginning band class, just there is a slide and there is a bell and there is a mouthpiece. And those are the three parts. That's somewhat incorrect, but general idea, just like the bare minimum, that is my main trombone. Mostly because that's what I started on and that's what I have to play at school for the most part. So that's what I've gone with as my main axe, if you will.
Beautiful. And then, so I love the basic trombone, classic, super great. You can do many things on it. Let's talk about this. And I forgot what cover it was, but there was one cover that I listened to a bunch of times, which you had the valve trombone.
Talk about that a little bit. So that is that's a bit of an interesting instrument, and I still have it. I'm borrowing it from my school, but I graduate in May, so I won't have it after that. We'll see. I might try and buy it from them. Who knows? That's an instrument that I decided I wanted to experiment with a little bit as a result of actually something I was doing at school. And so I just went and checked it out. And the valve trombone I have in particular is a cool one. It's made by King. So it also has a slide section, and that's the main trombone that I play on. So you can flip back and forth between using the valve trombone part and the slide trombone part of it.
Really? That is interesting. Yeah, yes.
I was surprised, and I didn't expect the slide half to be as good as it is when I first tried it out. I was just, I'll see. And it's actually better than the trombone that I own, like my personal jazz trombone. So that's part of the reason I'm hoping to buy that horn at some point.
That makes sense.
And so the valve trombone, if there's anyone out there that plays euphonium or tuba, it's the same fingering schematic as just playing a euphonium. And the main reason that I have it and the main person that I listen to that plays it is Bob Brookmeyer. He's fantastic jazz valve trombonist, prolific, jazz ensemble composer. Just, I love his work, and he is a large reason of why I had decided I wanted to at least explore the valve trombone a little bit.
Beautiful. And then you also experiment with like the soprano trombone and the bass trombone as well. What's the differences when you play like a soprano trombone as opposed to the traditional?
Sure. So a soprano trombone, and mine in particular, is not great. Mine was a gift and it was bought. It's one of the cheap ones you can buy on Amazon. I think it's like $200.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's not bad at all, but it's not a great instrument. Oh. It's not like well made, I would say.
So it's what you pay for.
It's kind of what you pay for. So it plays with a trumpet mouthpiece. And the way that compares to playing a trumpet is that it is significantly more difficult. I feel like I can kind of play the trumpet, but if you hand me the soprano trombone, I can make some sounds on it, but a lot of them aren't in tune, and a lot of them just don't slot very well. And typically the problem with using a soprano trombone is that you're giving it to trumpet players because they play it with a trumpet mouthpiece. But they don't know how to use the slide effectively. So I have the situation where I'm comfortable with the slide and relatively comfortable with the mouthpiece. My instrument's just not very well made. Maybe if I had a better one, I would like playing soprano a little better. It's definitely something that I mostly use for like the meme aesthetic of like me channel, but it's on four different size trombones, or the Ocarina of Time shop theme, but the same idea.
Okay, cool. And I think I saw on Twitter you got that bass trombone. Is it kind of a similar situation except with like a tuba mouthpiece or something?
So not as similar. So with a bass trombone, you still are using a trombone mouthpiece. I think there are some examples of a bass trombone where you might use a tuba mouthpiece, but don't quote me on that because I don't really know. And I actually have my bass trombone sitting right here next to me.
Oh, beautiful.
I actually just got done teaching a lesson before we got on here today.
Oh, great.
I still struggle a little bit playing the bass trombone, but it is much closer to playing an actual trombone than something like playing the soprano trombone is.
Gotcha.
Because the positions, when not using any of the triggers, all of the positions are in the relatively same locations. The biggest thing with the bass trombone is that it's just bigger. It's a bigger mouthpiece. It's a bigger bell. You've got that low range you've got to kind of dig into, which I'm having mixed success with at the moment. This is one of the first times I've really had a bass trombone to play, which is cool, but it's also a little bit difficult. Like, there's a reason that I hired bass trombonists for some of the big band arrangements I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That definitely makes sense, but beautiful. Mm-hmm. So another thing that I just want to pick your brain on, that I think is cool, and I haven't been able to talk to any other trombone player about this, but the Yamaha Mute, have you seen anything on that? It's been out for a crazy long time.
Yeah, so a lot of people have seen those. Are you talking about like the Silent Brass System Mute?
Yeah, Silent Brass. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people know what that is. There's a video that was circulating the internet, I must have been like 8 or 10 years ago at this point, of a trombone quartet called the Maniacal Four. Are you familiar with that group?
Yeah.
And they have the like rock trombone album. It's called Carry On. And they have a video. It's them performing an arrangement of Carry On, Wayward Son by Kansas. and they have that Yamaha Silent Brass System, and they've rigged it up to where they can use like guitar pedals and amps and stuff on
it. Oh, that is
so they
so
have
cool.
an electric trombone solo.
Wow.
Which is a very cool thing to do. It's just, it's not the most practical thing in like a live performance, because you know you have to have an entire amp set up with your trombone, but it's super cool in recordings.
Yeah. Super cool. And even like practicing, I have one personally because, you know, might as well. You don't want to have everyone listening to you when you practice.
Right.
And it's beautiful. You can't even really hear it whenever you're playing it. Kind of sounds like a fake hum or something.
Yeah. I have friends that have them and they'll just like, they'll be using them at school. And I'm like, that's really cool, and I wish I could afford one. I've got one of those like $20 aluminum practice mutes that like kind of works.
Yeah, but it's just kind of I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then also I just, while we're on the topic of mute, have you ever messed around with the plunger for like a solo of some kind? Or you do like the wah.
So, I've done some with that, mostly at school. Mm. I like the plunger effect. A lot of the time, I have a request form for covers on my channel, and one person literally wrote, "I don't care what you play, I just want to use a plunger, or I want you to use a plunger." And I still haven't done it.
You gotta do
because
it.
Because it's hard for me to like find a place to fit that into the arrangement.
Because
it's such a like specific color and just texture. It's kind of hard to use. In my experience.
Yeah, it's very like kind of a Dixieland kind of sound.
Yeah, to a point, yeah.
Yeah.
And so. I think especially if you get that in combination with like the Pixie Mute. There are some recordings of, I think it's the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra. I think it's a John Fedchuk. He plays with a plunger and a Pixie Mute, and it sounds like a cartoon. If you ever hear the like, oh yeah, yeah, like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh,
like that's all, in like old cartoons. That's kind of what that comes from.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Cool. Amazing. So, I think that's all I got on my mind for trombones. I love them. They're great. More people need to use them. That's all
I'm
saying.
Yes, I definitely agree.
Yes.
You know, I'm here trying to like kind of expand my instrument collection a little bit for arrangement purposes. You know, I've got a trumpet. I admittedly don't use it lately. I'm not using it as much in my like solo arrangements. I had a horn for a while and I had a euphonium for a while, but those were from my previous place of employment where I taught brass lessons, and I had to return those, unfortunately. But one day, One day I will have it.
You'll get them back.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So let's dive into, because I'm a huge nerd when it comes to video process and equipment and all that stuff. Let's first talk about your video making process, and let's use your most recent release, which is the Chemical Plant Zone, which I thought was fantastic. You did such a great job with that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, can you talk us through what the process of making that video from the beginning, like whenever you got the idea to release?
Sure. Obviously, you know, Chemical Plant Zone was a big band arrangement. I say big band, air quotes, because I cut a couple parts from it, but who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting?
That was obviously, you know, since it's a big band, it's a little bit different as far as if I was just making a video on my own, because there are all these different people involved. And so what I had done when I was arranging Chemical Plant Zone, it was shortly after I had arranged Song of Healing, which I used that same, with the exception of the saxophone sections, which I used that same like instrumentation. And for Song of Healing, I had still doubled up some parts and like done a couple of things myself. I think I programmed the drums and I played bass and lead trumpet on, which I still feel weird about because I had actual trumpet players on the arrangement, but they were playing the flugel parts and I didn't have a flugelhorn. So I had to, for some reason, that was the only way that made sense to me. So in looking at planning Chemical Plant Zone, I was, you know, slowly sourcing players, and I was going to double a couple of parts myself, but I just kept asking people, and by the time I was, I almost had the full band, and so I was thinking, well, I'm only missing a third trombone player and I think a drummer. And so I had just contacted some more collaborators, and I said, hey, I'm working on this arrangement. Would you be interested in playing for this? And I probably had the arrangement written. I think it took me like three separate occasions where I sat down and just wrote it, because I was like, I want to get this done. And the idea to write that arrangement had stemmed from the hope that maybe this fall we might have been able to have some live performances. I was working on a sort of like live set list to have an Eric L. big band, if you will, to like play
great.
some live video game big band shows, which is still something I'm kind of working on. Just, you know, obviously not anytime
just
soon,
because the big bad.
I think the Game Grumps call it like the Backstreet Boys reunion tour, or something.
Yeah, something like that. I think that phrasing is great.
Yeah. And so I had contacted all my collaborators. I think out of everyone that I had contacted, only two people weren't people that are, well, actually, I guess just one person was not someone from the video game music community, and that was Matt Jefferson, who played the bass trombone part. He was actually a member of the Maniacal Four Quartet that I mentioned earlier. And that's, I had known him from that, and he, my freshman year of college, came and gave a masterclass to our trombone studio. So I had a bit of a connection with him and just figured, why not? I'll ask. And so collectively, everyone in the band was someone that in some capacity I knew at least a little bit before we got the project together. And this one in particular, I had kind of a far out deadline. I think I had sent parts out and said, hey, get recordings back, I think by the end of the month. And I had sent it at the beginning of the month. And I think parts were still trickling in like a week or two after that deadline, but it was still very far ahead of when I actually wanted to release the video. So it ended up working out fine. I think even since I've done Chemical Plant Zone, because I already have two more big band projects that I'm in the process of recording of. So on that particular video, I had done all of that and said, here's everything. Here's like a click track. Here's your part. And I just dumped it all in a Google Drive folder and said, hit me back at the end of the month and I'll edit the video and it'll be a party. And not much has changed about that in organizing these more recent projects, though I am, because of how large these groups are and I want to give my collaborators a little bit better of a revenue split where I can, I am doubling up some of the parts myself, at least one of them where I can, in an effort to, you know, make a slightly larger revenue split available for everyone. Because, you know, these people I'm working with are fantastic at their, you know, their craft. And I want to make sure as best as I can that I'm, you know, paying them what they're worth.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
I would say, like, as far as that goes, that's probably one of the only things that's really changed about the process since then. Really, the biggest thing about putting Chemical Plant Zone together was just editing the video. It was, and it's not even that big of a video. We only had 13 parts, plus the inclusion of some borders here and there. It's really not that big of a video, but when I'm working on fairly, you know, not like, I'm not editing my videos on potatoes or anything, but like, it's certainly not like a super new computer. Like it takes a minute and there's a bit of struggle that comes with that.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's been a couple of projects that I've worked on where there's more than, you know, 15 people on the screen, and I have, because video or filmmaking is my job, I have a very high tech editing PC. You know, RTX, Ryzen 7, all of that good stuff. Not going to get into the details of it, but even, you know, a super tricked out PC like mine could still totally struggle. So with the 13 video streams, yeah, that's gonna cripple any system pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the video, like, still wasn't quite, you know, I'm happy with how it came out. There were still, like, some small blips here and there that I'm like, I wish I could have gotten rid of that. I just, between the, like, time constraint of trying to get it taken care of and everything and get it out at the time that I wanted to get it out at, it just, it wasn't going to happen. It's still a really, you know, I would say it's one of the best videos I've done in a long time, and I'm still very proud of it. It's just, there's a couple of things that I'm like, gar.
Yeah, I feel that with any video that I make, there's still always that regret of like, if I had another 2 hours, could have fixed all of it or something like that. So
yeah,
definitely feel that.
I think I veered off topic just a little bit.
That's
as far as the process of making Chemical Plant Zone, but I think I covered everything.
I think you did. And I think it perfectly transitioned since we're talking about video editing and whatnot. Let's talk about equipment, because again, I'm very interested in what people's equipment is recording wise, and I always say this on the podcast: it does not matter what equipment you have for filming and recording, as long as you do it in some capacity. You know, even if you have a smartphone from like 5 years ago, you could still make an amazing video off of that. So, with that in mind, I just want to know, you know, what's your setup? What's it look like? You know, lights, camera, editing software, microphone, all of that stuff.
So I'll start with like the audio stuff. So I use, and I've been using it since I started. I have been thinking about an upgrade for a while just because it's a little bit old. I use the AudioBox, the Presonus AudioBox. It's a 2-input. Because I've never really had much more need for more than just 2 inputs. That might change eventually. You know, if I'm going to have live big band concerts, maybe I'll do some live big band recordings sometime, or at the very least, like live whole sections at once. But I use that's what I use as far as my interface goes. I think probably the worst piece of all of my equipment is the laptop that I record on. It's a little bit old, but it can run everything. And
all right.
That counts for something.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's all that really matters, huh?
For a microphone, I've cycled through a few different things, but I currently use just a Shure SM57.
All right.
It's, you know, in my experience, it's a fairly good standby. The first time I used one, there was a noticeable difference for me. I think the first time I had ever used one, I was borrowing one from a friend when I recorded my cover of Lazy Afternoons. I think that was 2 years ago at this point. 1 or 2 years ago. I don't remember. But I heard a noticeable difference between the two. I think beforehand I was using an MXL 770, either a 770 or 990. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
And so I heard like a very distinct difference and decided I like the SM57 way better. I'm going to buy one as soon as like I have the money, which took a while, but we got there.
Beautiful.
Let's see. I use for lighting, I use an umbrella lighting kit. I think it's the cool Cowboy Studios kit.
Okay.
For a long time, I was only using two lights. I had a third stand. One of them broke or dimmed or something. So I bought a new light bulb. And literally within 20 minutes of setting up that stand, something knocked it over.
Oh, no.
I knocked it over. And so I ordered two replacement bulbs. So I've been using three for like the past two or three videos I've filmed.
Beautiful.
But we've been working with two for a while, and that seems to do okay. I think one thing that I need to focus on next time I film is just good lighting, because I do feel like some of my videos are a little bit dim. I'm sure to a degree there's some I can do as far as like the editing process. Sure I could make it look a little better there, but that segues a little bit into my statement that I don't really know a lot of the technical aspects of what I do. So I just kind of use what I have. So like for filming, I know that I have a Canon EOS M camera, and beautiful. I had to like buy, I don't remember what, it was some sort of, I think it's a 35 millimeter lens, that I had to buy as, it was not a Canon lens. It was like a, I don't even remember the brand. I think it was a knockoff brand that was somehow compatible with it.
Beautiful.
I had to like buy an adapter that I then put on the camera. It's like kind of janky.
It's probably
a little bit
like an EOS M to EOS S or something, or
something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I know the type of converter you're talking about though.
That's kind of as far as like the filming equipment goes. I think maybe the less technical and probably most sound part of my setup is the backdrop that I sometimes film against.
Beautiful.
I literally have just a photography backdrop that I suspend a black bed sheet from, and that does the trick for just a like sterile black background. I have come to not super like using that. When I can, I prefer to film in my living room, which is not often. It was more often over the summer because I was the only one home a lot of the time. I live with my family because it's free. And if I can live with my family while I'm finishing college, I probably should.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that.
And I guess I'm trying to think other equipment. I think, video editing software. Audio editing software. That's kind of important. So I use Reaper for my audio.
Cool.
I think a lot of us use Reaper. It's good. We love Reaper. By Reaper.
Buy it.
Not sponsored. And I use Vegas for my video editing. I think I got it. So the reason I use Vegas, I used to use Lightworks because there was a renewable free trial that you could do.
Yeah. Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And Vegas was part of a Humble bundle for like $20. It was around, I think, Christmas, the like December-ish time, and I want to say 2017. I remember the first video that I edited in Vegas was my cover of Beneath the Mask, which is still my most popular video. And that's a little scary to me because when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, there are things about this I like. There are things about this I do not like at all. But it looks like you can very obviously tell, because that's also the first cover that I used my new camera, the Canon that I use now. And you can kind of, at least I think, if you like go back and watch whatever video I had released right before my Beneath the Mask cover, you can very clearly tell, like, okay, he's using Vegas and he's using a new camera, because there were some like video editing things that were like very, to me, very obvious. Like, he could not do that before and he can kind of do them now.
Beautiful.
And I like Vegas. Admittedly, I do miss, you know, there are some things that I see people do that I know use Premiere and After Effects and stuff like that. And that's something I would like to have available. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate that I can't, at the moment, I can't afford to, you know, one, pay for the Adobe Suite, and two, take the time to learn it.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, personally, Vegas is totally, it's great. I haven't used Vegas in years. I'm a DaVinci Resolve editor myself.
Sure.
I love the software, but yeah, that's all a fantastic setup. And if you ever have questions about any filmmaking stuff, whether it's equipment or editing software, always feel free to hit me up, because I'm always talking with Ro about random video stuff. So if I could nerd out about some film stuff with you, I'd be happy to hop on.
There's a strong possibility I will take you up on that, because there are a lot of like technical things about this entire process that I'm still not like super confident in my understanding of.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be happy to help you out for sure, because I love doing tech support stuff for that. So hit me up.
Awesome. Thank you.
Always.
Thank
you. And that also goes to everyone in the audience as well, listening in. I might not know you. You might just be hearing the snippet out of nowhere, in which case I'm wondering how you got the snippet, but I'll still help you out. But yeah, that seems like a fantastic setup. The OSM is great. Vegas is great. Mm-hmm. Three light setup so that you could have the 3-point lighting. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I love it. Yeah, I think for the most part, hold on. There is one important thing that I forgot to ask.
Oh.
Are there any cool, fun, upcoming projects that you have coming that you could tell us about?
Okay, so like, obviously the statement, more big band projects.
Beautiful.
Like I've mentioned, I've got one that's already fully recorded, that I'm planning as kind of a Halloween video.
Sweet. Excited.
I've got another one slated for release in November, and one more in December. I'm not sure how I'm going to approach that one, but I've got a few more in the works.
Beautiful.
Nothing like super huge on the horizon. Cool. I would, you know, if COVID had cleared up a little bit, I would maybe say, you know, live show, live big band show sometime soon. But at the moment, nothing super huge.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I look forward to the 3 big band arrangements that you said. I'm excited to hear that, because I love big band stuff. And yeah, I think unless you have anything else that you want to talk about, I think this would be a good rounding up point with the... Well, first off, do you have anything else you'd like to talk about?
I don't have anything off the top of my head, no.
Beautiful. Well, then I'll ask the question that I like to ask everyone on the podcast, which is there a recent VGM cover or even soundtrack that you've listened to and you're bopping with right now and you think more people gotta love it?
Oh, man. So this might be a little bit of a popular answer at this point.
All right.
But you know, no shame. If you haven't heard Insane in the Rain's new version of Eterna Forest, that's a bop. That has been,
that is...
I think I've heard it at least once a day since it's come out. It is
beautiful.
Just so well done, and the strings give it a new life, and everything about it is just awesome. Carlos, if you happen to hear this, nice work.
Beautiful job. Great stuff. Well, yeah, I think that's it for the podcast. Eric, thank you so much for being on. It's been a pleasure talking to you about trombones and other various VGM stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great to be on. It's been great talking to you as well.
Thanks. Well, hopefully we could have you again at some point. And to everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. And I'll talk to you guys, or you'll, I guess I'm not talking to you guys, but you'll be hearing my voice next week. So, all right. See ya. Bye-bye.